Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Mike Eckel, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Mike, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. Well, events set in motion by Alexei Navalny's return to Russia on January 17th continue to move along at a rapid pace. Tens of thousands of people protested on Saturday in cities across Russia, demanding his release from jail and denouncing President Vladimir Putin. Navalny's associates are calling for more protests this coming Saturday, but let's talk about the ones that have already taken place and essentially the question of whether they were a success for Navalny and for those Russians who came out. Police cracked down very hard, detaining more than 3,700 people nationwide is the current number, which I think is more than on any single day in the past decade or more. And obviously, Navalny is still in jail and still facing a possible prison sentence at a hearing set for February 2nd. So one of the main demands for his release has, as expected, gone unanswered. On the other hand, many estimates indicate that more than 100,000 people protested, some in intensely cold weather. Mike, what's your main takeaway from Saturday's protests and the state response?
So I think before we jump into the question of the protests, I think it's worth a step back to look at Navalny and the question of what Navalny is not. Navalny, at least for the moment, is not a political rival to Putin. He's not an existential threat to the Kremlin. He's not the leader of a national movement. The key caveat or the operative word in all this is yet. He is not yet a political rival to Putin. He is not yet an existential threat to the Kremlin. He is not yet the leader of a national movement. What Navalny is an alternative, and that is his power. Putin, of course, remains a singular politician in Russia. He's hugely popular by nearly all reliable public opinion polls. There was a Lovata poll taken back in November before the new year that showed Navalny's popularity was in the single digits. But again, Navalny is an alternative, and that is his power. What he's done successfully is he's cracked the dominant political narrative that has been cemented in place by Putin and the Kremlin over Putin's 20 years in power. Navalny's talked openly and smartly about Russia's endemic corruption problem. He's talked about corruption among the inner circles of the Kremlin. He's talked about corruption among Putin's lifelong friends and allies. And he's done it very smartly with these snarky, flashy documentaries and investigations that get eyeballs and clicks. His team's documentary into the massive billion-dollar Black Sea Palace that allegedly belongs to Putin is now the most watched Russian-language film on YouTube. So it's important to keep that in mind.
All right. Well, I mean, that takes us to the protest, but I'd like to just respond to a couple of the things you said. I mean, I agree. I guess I would take issue maybe with some of your evaluations of Navalny. I mean, you did say not yet. Certainly, he's not a political rival of Putin in the sense that he's not running against him in elections because he hasn't been allowed to. He was shut out of the 2018 election. So in that sense, he's not a political rival. And but I think I would argue, and I think analysts are arguing that he is becoming more of one. He's, one analyst, Alexander Baranov, has said, you know, he's Russia's number two politician now, in part because of his actions, in part because of the way the Kremlin has treated him. Another thing I'd mention is the popularity. I forget the term, but Putin's popularity or his approval rating in the polls, in Lovata polls, is close to all-time lows. I think it's the most recent I saw was 65%. I think it's gone down as low as 50-something.
Yes,
58 or 59. So I mean, but I think there's an issue here of kind of people tending to say, you know, you're not going to be popular until you are in power. You know, I've spoken to people in Russia doing when I've been doing stories about elections, people who have complained, you know, regular man in the street, woman in the street, who have complained about Putin, and then, you know, ask them, who are you voting for? And they say, Putin, of course. He's the leader. So, you know, I think those polls or the level of popularity has to be taken with a grain of salt. But I'm digressing here. So just say, like, you know, let's get back to, the protests that happened on this past Saturday. And, you know, what's your takeaway from those?
No question those protests were... They were big. They were massive. They may have been the biggest protests that Russia has seen, certainly in years, possibly since the 2012 Bolotnaya protests at the beginning of Putin's second time in the presidency. And again, for people who weren't paying close attention to the weekend events, these are protests that happened in more than 100 cities across the country, across 11 time zones. They happened in sub-freezing temperatures. It was minus 56 Celsius in Yakutsk. And there are still people out on the streets in support of Navalny. And in the face of threats from police and in the face of, you know, subtle insinuations from employers and university rectors that people shouldn't be going out on the street to protest Navalny. And yet people came. And the most jarring images and we saw, of course, came from Moscow, where thousands, tens of thousands of people came and crammed the central streets of Moscow. And they came because Navalny called them to. Recall, after he was arrested last week upon returning from Germany to Sheremetyevo, Airport, Putin, Navalny was then trundled away into this makeshift court hearing where he was then ordered to serve 30 days of pre-trial detention pending another upcoming court hearing. And as that happened, Navalny said, okay, people, take to the streets in protest. And that's what we saw on Saturday. People came out to support Navalny, but they also came out, as we saw from the images and the footage and the conversations with people on the street, they came out for many people in protest to the system that has that exists in Russia, the system that has been helmed by Putin and cemented in place by the Kremlin over the past 20 years. So again, that kind of gets back to my initial point, is that Navalny is not yet a political rival to Putin in the traditional sense. Well, Navalny is an alternative, and people that showed up at the protest, I think, show that Navalny is presenting an alternative. There are three things to look forward to moving forward after this weekend's protests. Obviously, next weekend, Navalny's allies have called for another set of rallies, and they're hoping to capitalize on this past weekend's success. If they can turn out a sizable crowd in Moscow and Petersburg and other population centers, that will be an indication of momentum, certainly. Second thing to look forward to, the Kremlin and the Kremlin's response. Of course, they had riot cops out in force cracking heads at the protests this weekend. The question is, what happens now between now and next weekend? What sort of measures are taken to sort of preempt the protests, to suppress them? We'll get a lot of, I think, messaging on the local level, warning students or employees of various enterprises not to show up. We'll see more throttling of social media messaging. TikTok was targeted by the government before last weekend's events, so look for that. And then the other thing, more long term, is September, when the elections for the Duma, the lower house of parliament, are scheduled. There are a lot of open questions about how the election campaign will be conducted, whether United Russia will remain the predominant, unquestioned force in the Duma, and whether Navalny's past efforts to come up with a smart vote alternative can have taken root and can be used to challenge United Russia. So, again, the point is Navalny is building an alternative to the Kremlin, an alternative to Putin, and we'll have to see what happens going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing to watch, of course, is the following week on February 2nd, unless it's changed, the hearing that could result in a 3.5-year prison term for Navalny. So that will be, you know, in the past they've avoided handing him or actually sending him to prison for years, even though although he's been in jailed many times for shorter periods of time. So that's a big, big step, a big stage in this process. Don't have too much time left, but I'd like to turn to the U.S. response a bit and discuss that. Shortly after or on Saturday, during and after the protest, the State Department called on the Russian authorities to release people, quote, detained for exercising their universal rights and also for Navalny's immediate and unconditional release. And it urged Russia to cooperate with the international investigation into Navalny's poisoning and what the State Department said was the use of a chemical weapon on Russian soil. So that's obviously a reference to Navalny's poisoning in August with a nerve agent from the Novichok group, which he blames on Putin. And that's what led to him being flown to Germany for treatment there and then to his return on January 17th. Mike, you wrote last week about how Navalny's return 3 days before President Joe Biden's inauguration in the U.S. may affect relations between Moscow and Washington. While condemning Navalny's jailing and the protest crackdown, the Biden administration is offering a 5-year extension of the New START nuclear arms control treaty, which is due to expire on February 5th. So it looks like the new administration may face what they call a delicate balancing act. Mike, after this weekend's events, do you have any thoughts about how the relationship may play out in the coming weeks and months?
Delicate balancing, disentanglement, compartmentalization. Washington, relations between Washington and Moscow are bad, and they have been bad for some years now. That has continued, certainly was the case under the Trump administration. And, you know, the Biden administration is, which is populated by many veterans of the Obama administration, something worth noting. The Biden administration is trying to come up with a way to engage with Russia in a constructive way. My sources in Washington were telling me at the State Department and elsewhere that there are two priorities for the Biden administration where Russia is concerned: arms control and Navalny. Arms control, as you discussed, involves New START. The Russians wanted to extend New START. The Biden administration wants to extend New START. So that's probably going to go forward. That's an important thing. I mean, this is, let's be real, this is the last remaining arms control treaty controlling the capping the arsenals of the world's two largest nuclear powers. So that's important. But in many ways, that's sort of low-hanging fruit because there are so many other issues that are bedeviling the relationship between Washington and Moscow. And now Navalny is front and center. And even before the Biden administration took office, we had indications that Navalny was going to be a priority. This is what I wrote about in my article last week. The White House National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, just 2 hours after Navalny was arrested in Moscow, was out with a tweet espousing support for Navalny. He was out faster than the State Department, interestingly, although the State Department, of course, was also supportive of Navalny. So now fast forward to the protests. So over the weekend, we had the U.S. embassy issuing a warning to U.S. citizens in Moscow saying, hey, look out, there's going to be a big protest in Moscow this weekend at this location. U.S. citizens might want to take precautions. That clearly or apparently did not go over very well with the Russian Foreign Ministry, which labeled or classified that, categorized that statement as an example of American interference in Russian domestic affairs. And then subsequent to that, we got the statements of support from the State Department for the protesters calling for Navalny's release. And we got later similarly punchy statements from the foreign ministry and then from the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov on state TV. So what does this all mean? Where does this take us? I mean, you know, is the Biden administration really going to make Navalny the centerpiece or a priority for its engagement with Russia? I mean, it's not just a domestic issue, of course. I mean, there was a chemical weapon used against Navalny, Novichok, or a chemical related to Novichok. And that's potentially a violation of international treaties. I mean, that's a big deal. And the U.S. has not yet crafted a full response about how to deal with that. But, you know, the Russia and the Kremlin have long gone on about the fears that the Americans are interfering in Russian domestic affairs, going back to the time when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So, you know, it doesn't bode well for the short term of U.S.-Russian relations if Navalny is going to be a priority for the Biden administration. We're just going to see a lot more punching back from the Kremlin and from the foreign ministry. And that's going to make it hard to really find other ways to engage with Russia. It's possible if you can compartmentalize one from another. But, you know, it's not looking good for the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, clearly the his return and what's happened since and going back to the poisoning, but just the timing as well, you know, obviously sets up kind of an additional or augments the barriers to some kind of an improvement of relations.
Right.
So one thing I'd like to sort of maybe nitpicking, but
yes.
The wording of you mentioned Jake Sullivan's statement and the State Department statement after or during on Saturday.
Yes,
I would maybe not call it support for Navalny. You know, they called for his release and they expressed support for protesters to exercise their constitutional rights to free assembly and other freedom. So, you know, I would just separate the idea of, you know, support for rights and freedoms and calls for the release of Navalny and of detained protesters, you know, as opposed to kind of U.S. support for Navalny per se.
Yes.
But that's sort of a I guess, a semantic thing, a linguistic thing.
Yes.
But I think it's maybe somewhat important given the, you know, the accusations coming from the Kremlin, from Russian state media and such.
Yes.
Who are, you know, so absolutely. Mike, thanks very much for your insights. It's great to have you on the show. Again, we're running out of time. We'll have to wrap it up for today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.